Tamarack Song writes quite convincingly about nature and nature speak, and one only needs to pick up one of his books or attend one of his workshops to know why. He speaks the natural world by heart. So when he writes about this deeply organic experience and says he can barely dance words around it, I'd say, let's dance. Today we'll be speaking and sharing inspirations from his book, Becoming Nature. I'm Robin. Stay tuned for Tributaries. Tamarack, to quote you, our first language, nature speak, is more than a way to speak and listen. It is the operating system for our minds and the basic lens through which we perceive our world. And you just write so eloquently about everything, actually. And so you really know what you're writing about. And the first is our ability to go far beyond mere intelligence. And I'm wondering if you can start today by bringing us into what you call the complete communication system.
Yeah, this is actually the core of what I'm all about, I guess. And I think what we're all about when we get beyond our conscious perceptions, there's a deeper mind that we're typically not in conscious touch with that really runs the show. It runs our show. It runs our personal operation, and it also runs the greater show, because our deeper mind, which is the limbic process, neuroscience research is exposing a lot of what goes on within our deeper mind right now, and it's beautiful to see that science is confirming what I've learned from the elders years ago, and that is that there's this consciousness, this deeper consciousness from which we function. And neuroscience research is showing now that 95 to 99% of what goes on within us is occurring within our limbic process, our deeper mind, which some people would call our subconscious or our superconscious, depending upon perspective. And this is the basis of nature speak. There's a deeper communication going on than what we are communicating right now verbally. This is just really the surface reflection of the interaction, the relational interaction that is going on between you and me right now, Robin, and also with our hoop of life, with everything that's going on around us. We're picking up all types of cues subconsciously. We have intuitive voices that are speaking. We have deep memories that we don't have conscious awareness of, that we are utilizing all the time. Here's how it works. When sensory input comes in, it's meaningless to us. For example, my eyes are picking up reflected light, and that reflecting light is just reflected light. The only reason it means something to me is that there's a deep memory that comes up that associates it with the pattern of reflected light that comes in, and I can identify what's going on. Oh, yeah, this is reflected light coming from trees or birds or another person or whatever, and that's the only way I can identify what's there, by associating my sensory input with these deep memories in my subconscious mind. So what's really going on is occurring in my subconscious mind, not in my frontal lobes, not in my rational processes, and which is what we, especially in Western cultures, are so conditioned to define as being a thinking being. I'm a thinking being because I have this rational intellectual capacity. Well, that is just the tip of the iceberg. What's really going on is deeper, and that's what nature speak is all about.
Yes, and it's kind of comical if you look at it, because here we are, you said that 90 to 95%, and so when people are speaking, they think they're communicating with words, but there's such a huge skew there that it's no surprise that there's so much miscommunication that goes on in the world.
Oh boy, yeah, so true. You know, a word I choose to represent what I'm thinking or feeling is just a symbol. It's just an approximation. Just choose any word. I can say tree. I'm looking at a tree. Well, you don't see the same tree I see, so tree to you might represent something very different than tree to me. I'm looking at a small birch tree right outside my window right now, and you being out west might have a giant sequoia in mind when you think tree. So it's just an approximation. So total communication is very difficult for us who are verbally oriented. So what we often do is we ramble on to try to capture what we want to convey. We write poetry. We have music. We write books. We talk incessantly. We're either talking with words or listening to words, always trying to get closer and closer and closer to real, fundamental, meaningful communication. Whereas the real communication that is occurring is verbless. There are no words involved. Words just get in the way of nature speak. The animals, the trees, and our relationship with all of life is occurring all the time in a perfect and complete sense. And the doorway to that is to leave the accoutrements of our civilized existence behind and to relearn how to listen, to really listen, to listen deeply.
Yes, absolutely. And in bringing up poetry, that's certainly what comes to mind for me, especially when reading your book, Becoming Nature, or one of your other books, because it just opens that door. There is that background, as you mentioned, of grace or that presence of the subconscious and the intuition. And it's quite in the foreground, but it is silent, so it's not necessarily acknowledged in, I guess it doesn't get its quite due, and perhaps this is what we're doing right now, and as a whole, our path in this world, and as you just called our hoop of life, is bringing that more into consciousness. And you, I'm wondering how you do relate this to what you call our three core operating skills of orienteering, tracking, and envisioning.
Yeah, this is a deep subject here. Our three core skills are essentially our operating system. You can relate it to a computer operating system. The way they work is that these are our blueprint, and we function with them by them becoming us, essentially. Everything we do is in terms of movement is orienteering. Everything that wherever we go, whether it's doing online research, whether it's reading a book, whether it's walking to the refrigerator to grab something to eat, we are using our basic orienteering skills to do it, to function. This is the blueprint by which we move and by which we function. We cannot do anything without this basic orienteering ability. And the same with tracking. I'm going to the store to purchase something. I'm going to the grocery store, for example. Well, I'm thinking that I just hop in my car and I go, I drive there. But I'm using my tracking ability. I have to get from point A to point B, and how am I going to do that? What skill set am I relying upon? It's the same skill set that a tracker in Africa or anywhere in the wilderness or in the wilds is tracking down an animal. A hunter uses the same skills that I use to get to the grocery store or to get to the refrigerator. I need basic tracking skills in order to do that. And in order to know what I am after, I need to envision that because I don't have it before me. If I'm going to the grocery store, for example, I need to envision the grocery store and I need to envision what's there and I need to envision the process by which I'm going to procure what is there for me before I employ my orienteering and tracking skills in order to get there. And this applies not only to the physical skills, such as the examples I've brought up, but also our psycho-emotional skills and the needs for psycho-emotional fulfillment. Love, what is love all about? I need these three basic skill sets in order to be fulfilled in a loving way as well. So this essentially defines who and how we are as functioning, interactive, relational beings.
Yes. Of course, there is such a universality to nature speak. And perhaps moving back into the poetic, can you give an example of perhaps the nature speak of lake?
Yeah. This is all about feeling and sensing. If I say lake, again, just as the example I used before, if I say tree, I come up with an envisionment. Well, this is not, envisionment alone is not communication. Orienteering alone, tracking alone is not communication. It needs to be visceral. It needs to be felt. It needs to be experienced. Now, if you say lake, I can close my eyes and I can immerse myself in lake consciousness, you might say. And this is touching on nature speak now because I am experiencing it. I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my flesh. All of my memories of lake experiences come up. And what I do in nature speak, it's all in the now. It's all right here and now. It's not just drawing on past memories, which I have to do when I'm speaking verbally. So when I am speaking verbally, I can future project or I can regress into the past. With nature speak, I'm right here in the now. And it's not that the now eliminates the past or the future, but rather it is a continuum with past, present, and future all here in the same moment, at the same time. And this is what the fullness of communication is all about in nature speak. For example, well, let's not take another example. Let's go with lake. If you and I are together and we're walking through the woods and we come upon a lake, the word lake does not have to be spoken because right there it is. It's in our consciousness and it's visceral. We can touch it. We can taste it. We can feel it. We can grasp it. We can grasp its totality. And at the same time that we are experiencing this lake, our past memories, our past memories from our subconscious about our lake experiences come to the forefront into the now. Because this is how I determine whether this might be a shallow lake or a deep lake, or whether there might be fish in this lake, or if I can swim across this lake because I've swum across lakes of this size before or not, and also what this means to me in the future. Why did I come to this lake? Am I looking for a particular type of lake? Are we going to walk beyond this lake? So I have everything occurring simultaneously, right in this instant, past, present, and future. And that's what nature speaks all about.
And it also feels as though it's losing the personal. Like, it's great to think or feel all those things, but isn't there a point where lake's essence or something actually takes over? I don't know. That's a poor way of saying it, I think. But obviously, a lake has a different essence or feel than a tree or than the ocean, of course. And I guess there's really no fully getting away from our own experience, but there's a certain immersion, I would imagine, especially when you're becoming nature with animals, that takes place. And I know you've spoken about it in the past regarding your experience with the wolves, for instance, as well.
Actually, I think you've expressed it really well. Lake's essence takes over. That says it. That says it very succinctly. When we are speaking consciously right now, verbally, we are coming from an I place. Our egos are involved. It's you and me interacting. It's a back and forth that's occurring. However, when we came to that lake, all of a sudden, I don't exist anymore. I have become the lake, and you have become the lake, and we are interacting in lake consciousness now because all of these lake memories have come up from my subconscious, and I am experiencing this lake viscerally at the same time, and I am envisioning a future where I am interacting either with this lake or other lakes, depending upon my intent for being there. So the I disappears, the ego vaporizes, I shouldn't say vaporizes, but rather merges, meshes with the lake, with lake consciousness. So in the terms of becoming nature, which is what nature speak is all about, we are becoming the lake. We are becoming an element of nature there and everything that is connected with it. So we are in a place of lake consciousness, you might say, rather than ego consciousness.
Yes. And I don't know if you're familiar with a man named Padre Pio. He was an Italian, and I have heard from people who knew him, he could have an English-speaking person, a Spanish-speaking person, an Italian-speaking person in the same room, and he would speak, and they all would understand him in their own language.
No, I'm not familiar with him.
So that certainly is a very true essence of nature speak, being able to bring
yes.
it to that level. And certainly that level exists with the animals and
yeah.
us as well, but most of us aren't that honed in yet.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example. That's exactly it. Bears speak bear language, deer speak deer language, raccoons speak raccoon language. However, they all understand each other intimately because they have to. It's a matter of survival. They have to read each other. They have to know what each other's intent is because they are co-inhabiting. They're coexisting. They're not competing with each other in the way that we think they might be. They are actually cooperating very very beautifully, actually. It's a beautiful dance that they're involved in. And it's beautiful to see them when I'm in this place where I can just be with them. And I am interacting with them as well. And there's this ebb and flow going on where they complement each other in a beautiful way rather than, you know, fighting and struggling. It's, you know, it's the law of the jungle. The law of the jungle is one of relationship, actually. It's not one of animals eating animals and this constant competition going on at all. There's this very aesthetically pleasing interactive support system going on, you might say. And this is nature speak. This is nature speak in its essence, just as the example you gave. They all seem so different, and they seem to have different needs and wants, and even competitive needs and wants. However, they all understand each other, and they all help and support each other, because giving is receiving. If a raccoon helps bear, a bear is going to help raccoon. If they compete against each other, they're going to be hurting each other, and to nobody's benefit.
I understand, and I see what you mean, but I think an important point that you bring up in your book, Becoming Nature, is about peace and its place in the natural world. I've recently seen this movie, Born in China, which is about a few different animals that live in China. And nature is quite merciless in many ways. It's very territorial and it's very aggressive when it needs to be for survival. And so you do bring up that point about peace and its place in the natural world. And I'm wondering if you would speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think we perceive nature as oftentimes being merciless and animals as being territorial and unforgiving. Because we come from a culture of scarcity, we have to compete. We compete for jobs, you know, we compete for a place in the freeway sometimes to get to work. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog world, as they say. We compete in school. We compete for grades. We compete in sports and on and on and on. We're always competing for something. And in the natural world, it's different than that. It's very different. And I don't mean to sound contradictory to the way most of us perceive either our civilized world or the natural world. However, when I'm there, it feels different. Let's take an example of wolves and caribou. They have a relationship. Wolves eat caribou, and caribou are eaten by wolves. Okay, it seems to be a pretty simple prey-predator relationship. And it would seem as though the caribou would do better without the wolves, and the wolves would do poorer without the caribou. Well, it's not that way at all, because the caribou need the wolves, and the caribou are speaking that. If the wolves were not there, the caribou would be in dire straits because of a number of factors. First of all, they would overpopulate their range, and they would start dying of disease and starvation, and they would destroy their environment by overeating their range. Secondly, the sick would not be removed from the herd. The wolves are needed in order to keep the herd healthy. The caribou would quit evolving because they would not be challenged. Their sensory perceptiveness would not be challenged. So they would start degrading as a species. So from all these perspectives, the caribou are saying, "Wolf, my brother, let's live together. We need each other." And the same is true with wolf. If wolves were just fed like dogs, they would cease evolving. In fact, they would devolve. Their sensory perceptiveness would decrease. They would overpopulate their range. They would destroy their habitat in the same way that the caribou would. So they are literally brother and sister, and this is something the elders impressed upon me at a young age because I didn't understand it at first. I guess I did intrinsically, but not intellectually, and they helped me to bring it to the forefront so that I can write books like Becoming Nature and help to share these awarenesses. This is very, very important. You know, when the elders talk about brother wolf and sister bear, mean it literally. These animals are brother and sister to each other and to us because we need each other. And just because there is killing and fear and death, this is all a part of life, an intrinsic and necessary part of life. And anyone who has this awareness would not have it any other way.
Yes, yes, well said. Thank you. And Tamarack, you experience entering the animal mind and how there is no equality. And I'm not necessarily asking you to turn into a psychologist right here, but what do you think is up with humankind that is being forced upon us, trying to make all things equal, you know, in so many ways? From racism to, of course, we are all equal as humans, but within the human race, regardless of color or age or whatever, there is no one equal line across the path. And yet in trying to, it just seems like it's trying to be forced right now, and it's not really going to happen, is it?
It can't happen because there is no equality. There's no way a raccoon is going to be equal to a bear. There's just no way. They're entirely different animals. The concept of equality is an artificial construct. And the reason, as I perceive it, that we are so hung up on equality and so working so hard for it in our civilized cultures is that we, again, it's coming back to the culture of scarcity, the concept of scarcity. When there is scarcity, there's competition. And in order to keep competition from going awry and having such strong, extreme divisions between classes or between ethnic groups or religious groups or whatever, we need to impose an artificial construct in order to maintain some sort of equilibrium. And so the construct of equality was evolved in Greco-Roman times to help counteract the deleterious effects of cultures based on scarcity rather than abundance. And in the natural realm, there is no artificial construct, and there's no construct needed because nobody believes in equality. It's a myth. There's no way that I am equal to you. You are far superior to me, Robin, in many ways that I could not match you, and vice versa. And here's where we have complementarity rather than compatibility. The day and the night are not the same. Why try to make them equal? They both have their gifts.
Yes.
To complete the sun cycle, why try to make them the same?
Yes.
They're entirely different, and they should be, and they ought to be, and we are all entirely different from each other. If we can embrace our abundance, if we can come back to a place of trust and openness and true empathy and mutual support, there's no reason for any artificial constructs to help to reinforce our need, our biological needs.
Yes. Probably a quick way out of nature speak is to talk about having a pet and winding up, as most people do, always telling the pet what to do.
Oh, boy.
What do you recommend starting a child off with when they have a pet? And P.S., I love that you wrote in your book that you don't have to be one of the last wild Aborigines to speak with animals.
Right. Well, so much can be done with learning nature speak and helping to re-become what it is to be human with a pet if we just drop the concept of pet. Pet means that I own this animal, that I have control over this animal, and this animal at least sometimes needs to do what I want this animal to do. So what I'm doing is creating an extension of myself rather than embracing another being as brother or sister. So this is what gets in the way. It's this superiority and the thought that I know what another living being should be doing and how to do it. The more freedom we can give our quote-unquote pets, the more they are going to be their natural selves, and the more they are going to be immersed in nature speak. We can teach pets hand signs. We can teach them to respond to our verbal cues, our commands and such. However, we're just creating another human out of them. We're trying to create another civilized human out of them. If we can just let them be and listen to them and realize that they are far superior to us in some ways, just as we are with them and just as you and I are with each other, Robin, and just listen, just be with them, we're going to be able to start listening to what they have to teach us, and what they have for us is tremendous.
Tamarack Song walks his talk and always talks more than the half hour allows for radio. So next week, we'll conclude our interview. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasting is under Tributaries Radio at iTunes. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.